Welcome to The Download. This is Chris Jones, the Tribune critic and columnist, here with you with my great pal, Mr. Mark Caro.
Hello.
Author, host of Is It Still Funny series at the Music Box Theater. We should talk about that a bit later. Big time book writer. We're here for Justin. We're here through 11 o'clock. We're glad you're joining us. We're glad to be along. We've been talking about all kinds of things. We're just in the middle of talking about the big news story of the day. Al Franken, who was accused of groping a woman on an overseas USO tour in 2006, he sort of apologized, finally got to a real apology. It's been a sort of a big story today. It's upset a lot of people, like all these things do, but for some people, I think Franken was more upsetting because a lot of people thought of him as sort of not of that ilk, which has proved to be otherwise. We're joined right now by our good pal Michael Phillips, movie critic at the Chicago Tribune.
Hi, man.
Hey.
It's good to see you.
How you doing?
We're good, and we're glad you're joining us.
This is great.
Did you bring us some steak?
No, this is right. Last time we were together, we were having a fine kind of 1950s-style meal.
We should do that.
Over at a steakhouse downtown.
That's exactly. So what did you make of the Al Franken apology? Or the final apology?
The second one, yeah, right.
They always
tend to revise upward or sideways or something. But I think in this case, at least, it hardly matters really in the end because what he did matters more. But the fact that he actually said the words "I'm" and "sorry" in the same sentence together,
right,
puts him ahead of Louis C.K., for example.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
and he didn't repeat "admired" about 55 times. Also.
Yeah, and he didn't turn it into a kind of a soul searching thing about how he needs to change as an individual as much as just kind of just realize, owning up to what he did. So
yeah, and the truth is, what people think of me in light of this is far less important than what people think of women who continue to come forward to tell their stories.
Right, it's the opposite of what Louis C.K.
So. It seems like it's about as comprehensive and well worded and intentioned as it could be. And then the question is, are we as a society ready to accept this apology, or what has to happen for this apology to be accepted?
Well, I think we're not in a redemption narrative moment, right?
No.
So maybe that's coming because it's interesting. I've been thinking that, there's been all of this barrage of accusations, and then they've all ended, and there's a sense that these guys, many of them are done. Some of them may well be in jail eventually. Not all of them, but some of them. And we're not in a moment where anyone is really ready to hear anything other than "you're done." And then it's not really, it's like this purge, as it were, seems to have to take place before anybody can talk about anything else. And because it's so overwhelming that I think the number of people in this situation is so overwhelming.
But I would say that I would caution using the word purge because that really does make it sound like you have a lot of vengeful, relatively unstable people behind
no,
it.
No, I don't think so. I mean, a purge is to take something that is in a system and get rid of it, and that's sort of what
When in different situations, much different than this whole kind of like amazing sort of harassment, streak we're all living in. Every few hours, we have another enormous news cycle to kind of like add to the story. But it's really more just like, okay, it's zero tolerance policy. And you can say, well, where did that come from? Or why don't I get my second chance? Or where's the redemption narrative? But for now, it's the pendulum is swinging the other way. It's zero tolerance for a while. And who knows in 5 years where we're going to be sitting. But, the hope, I think, for a lot of people is that they'll be sitting in a place where more women are running whatever show is in the industry. They've been marginalized too long.
Right, and this all started, as well as anything could start, with those very well reported pieces on Harvey Weinstein, and his reaction also was just horrible, and the whole thing was basically. Part of I think the zero tolerance is that his whole initial reaction to it was kind of like, I'm going to get my treatment and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to take down the NRA in the meantime and you're going to root for me and all this stuff. And it was so cynical that it was kind of like laying out, it was like he was deconstructing the recovery you know, trajectory, his narrative. Like he's saying, yeah, this is bad now, so just check off the box that I'm going to go to rehab and I'm going to do all this stuff and it's going to be okay. And then just this onslaught of, you know, accusations against him and just, and like really criminal stuff. And you're like, no, this narrative doesn't work. You can't just say, I'm just going to go on the redemption tour. And Kevin Spacey can't just say, I'm just going to go get my treatment.
Or
I think
I'm
people
just gonna,
are done with that.
Or
you know?
I'm gay, you know,
yeah,
suddenly.
Yeah. Right. You right. Know, yeah. Yeah. Now I'm willing to admit it because it's going to help me. I mean, it was just, that was bad on so many levels. And so I think people are, I think everyone's sort of recognizing, because all the news cycles are so sped up, they're like, you know, I don't want to go on the whole sort of, I'm not ready to forgive them yet, you know? And even if they write a really nice apology like Al Franken did, but people were hoping he was going to run for president. And it's like, well, can he run for president? No, because this happened. But then again, the president, you know, the guy who was elected president had, you know, stuff come out, you know?
I don't think he was ever going to run. I don't think he was ever going to run. I mean, when he came through Chicago for the Printers Row Book Fair, which seems like a hell of a long time ago, it was just a few months ago, but he was pretty adamant about it. And maybe it's just, maybe everybody says they don't run until they run.
Well,
right?
maybe the whole running or not running is less important. Is, does this guy's voice not get heard now because of what he did?
Right. Let me ask you guys this, two things. Two things have been really bugging me now that we've had, you know, so many people between, you know, Weinstein and coming off of Donald Trump's, the accusations against Donald Trump and what we know about what he said. You know, James Toback, Kevin Spacey, all this.
Roy Moore.
Roy Moore.
Was not apologized.
Roy Moore and now, you know, Al Franken and who knows tomorrow, right? But two things. One thing really depresses me. It's actually lowered the bar for human decency. Like so many people can now just sort of say, well, I may be difficult or a bully, but I'm not as bad as those guys. Mm. It's actually lowered the bar for human decency, I think. And the other thing is that it's really, and
what do you mean? Let's unpack that a little. What do you mean, lowered the bar?
Well, I mean, I think it actually, having all this really skeezy behavior kind of spieling out every day is making, I don't know if it's making people, men, question their behavior as much as it might otherwise, because I think they basically just start to think, well, as long as I'm not as bad as all that, you know, I'm a reasonably good human being. You know, I can be. I don't know. That sort of hits me that way. No, not
well, you. Well, and I've been in conversations where you know, as you know, look, we're three dudes talking about this right now, and
well, we've got to deal with it.
We do have to deal with it. No, I do. And well, that's sort of the reflexive defensiveness where I mean, it's like I feel like I've been on like the other end of it where not the other end of it, but it's just like I just can't imagine this behavior. I can't imagine doing it, and I'm not going to raise my hand going, I've never done this, because there are people who get defensive about it, like, well, this is just tarring everyone with the same brush. I'm like, nah, get over
okay,
it.
But,
you know?
But
who cares?
But I mean, are you at all nagged at the times, whatever it is, college or in your 20s, whatever, where you were overheard or saw or heard were in some sort of social situation where, you know, somebody was behaving badly, you know, patronizing at that, maybe bullying or humiliating or even, you know, sexually harassing somebody, and you didn't do everything you should have done at that moment? It was more of like a shrug or silence or just sort of like changing the subject, or you just didn't really call them out on it. You weren't the upstander you wish you were. And now that frankly bugs me a bit.
Because you were.
So in breaking news, the president just tweeted, the Al Frankenstein picture is really bad. The Al Frankenstein picture is really bad. That's what the president just tweeted.
Yeah, S-T-E-I-N.
S-T-E-I-N.
No is no. No is always no. If they say no, it means 1,000 times no.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Download. This is Chris Jones and Mark Caro. We're in for Justin Kaufman. We're glad you're along. It's 9:21. If you were watching, you know, if you're in your car right now, if you were home watching cable news, you'd be seeing people talking about the very thing that we're talking about, which has been the Al Franken story today and the president's recent tweet, the Al Frankenstein picture is really bad.
Speaks 1,000 words. Exactly. This is the whole tweet. And then he says, where do his hands go in pictures 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 while she sleeps? Question mark. Dot, dot, dot.
This is all the president's tweet.
That's the president's tweet.
So we're joined also by our good pal, Michael Phillips, who's a movie critic, but also a thinker about masculinity in this moment, and a smart dude on all these topics.
Dude is the right word tonight. Dude. This is tonight, guys. WGN stands for White Guys Nonstop.
Well, not entirely.
Not entirely,
because we have our fabulous producer Cash, who is like listening in.
She's gonna come in.
So go on, tell us, break up the dude circle for a second.
Break up the dude circle.
Yeah, come on, go right ahead and do that.
I feel like it's almost ironic and sad that it took till 2017 for, you know, guys to actually stop and realize, like, hey, maybe this is wrong. We shouldn't do these things to women. And it's like, if women flipped the script and did what guys do to them, it'd be really odd. Like, if a guy got catcalled, it'd be really awkward. They'd be like, what? That's weird. I'm walking down the street. Or if a girl was like, oh, well, his jeans were really tight, or, you know, his shirt seemed a little revealing, you know, like, that kind of stuff is really awkward. So I feel like it's very important that men have to, like, put other men in their place. Like, hey, what you're doing is wrong. And then what you were saying a while ago about, like, when you were in your 20s, I feel like oftentimes guys will not call out other guys if they're their friends. They're like, yeah, oh, well, he's my friend. He didn't mean any harm by it, but if it's a random guy that he sees, he may call him out on it. And I feel like for men to even do anything, like, moving forward, they first need to look at what they've done in their past and be like, you know what, I did do this. I did something similar to this that was wrong. How can I influence and teach other men, younger men, not to do things as this moving forward?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the part of the awkwardness in the conversation for some people too is that, I mean, I'll just say this because it sounds self-serving, but it's true. You know, the things that I'm reading about are things that I never would imagine doing to another human being, period, whether it's a woman or a man. But obviously, because, you know, there's a sexual harassment, assault aspect of this, it just never would occur to me, because it just wouldn't occur to me. You know, there are nice guys out there. And so then you also go on Facebook or something, and you see this defensiveness, like, well, I'm not doing this, da 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 da. And it kind of doesn't matter whether, you know, it sort of doesn't matter whether I, you know, was nice to women or not. I mean, it does matter, but, like, these obviously, just the fact that there's so many women who are going through this, yes, everyone needs to be on high alert. It doesn't matter what your identity is in all of this, if you're a guy or a woman or anything else, everyone just has to be of the, you know, the stance of this is not acceptable, and you all have to speak out on it.
Well, I think the worst thing about these really, like, 10 out of 10 high-end, horrible examples of what we're how Harvey Weinstein, James Toback, and Kevin Spacey, and all these, you know, it almost lets the vast majority of kind of more, like, you know, mid-level harassment guys, you know, off the hook, because it's like, okay, I'm not that bad. And
you know,
a lot of us, there's millions of us, I think, millions of guys out there who can look back at their, you know, at their younger selves and think, you know, can remember the people, they friends of theirs, maybe people they didn't know, but they didn't call out the behavior or the insults or even the harassment when they should have. It was more about silence or shrugging it off or changing the subject, or, you know, they just didn't do or say what they should have done.
So are you hopeful for men, Cash? Or do you, where are you? What are you hopeful?
Hopeful
for the likes of us at these microphones?
For you three, yeah. Like, you three seem nice. Like you have a really good grip on it, but there's plenty of other men that don't get it, and there's still a very, very big issue with victim blaming, and that's where, instead of putting the blame on the accuser and the person that did it, instead the blame is flipped back onto the victim, and I feel like that is so wrong.
I feel like
there's just so many cases of this that happens on, like, college campuses and, you know, in high school and whatever. I mean, just earlier today, a story broke out about a sexual assault case at Lindblom High School. And it seems like victims are afraid to come out and say anything because of the backlash that they'll receive. And I feel like that is super, super wrong. It is so ignorant of men that instead of the man actually standing up and be like, yes, I did wrong, I did this, it wants to be flipped onto the victim, like, well, look at what you've done to me. Now my image is ruined. Now I have to say my apology and recreate my entire image. Like, well, if you didn't do this in the first place, you wouldn't need to. So I think that with these bigger cases now coming out, it's definitely bringing a lot more awareness to the issue, which is always a good thing. And I feel like what you guys are doing is great, because the more that men talk about it, the more that other men will listen. I don't know what it is, but guys seem not to listen to women very much. But when males call out other males, then other males are more likely to listen to that.
So, and if I could say this again without being self-serving, and if because maybe it's actually heartening, I do think there are a lot of guys out there who really are genuinely appalled by this. They would have been appalled by this in their 20s, or if they're in their 20s now, and they don't put up with this sort of behavior. They never did, and, you know, there are nice people. There are nice guys out there, and there are also people who are completely clueless.
Oh,
obviously, we need to all get on the same page, but also to not be sort of despairing when you have this avalanche of these depressing stories to think, oh, it's just everyone. Because, like, no, there's still, you know, was it The Onion that had the headline, you know, actress, you know, confirms Tom Hanks still nice guy or something like that. Like, there are a few of those out there. Stop
wasting my time. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chris Jones. I'm here with Mark Caro.
Hello.
And we're in for Justin Kaufman on The Download. You're listening to WGN 720 WGN Radio. It is 9:38 in the evening. So we've got a packed show. We've got like an hour and 22 minutes to go. We've got in the 10 o'clock hour a visit from the great writer, one of my favorite writers, actually, Mark, Jeff Ruby from Chicago Magazine, or Jeffrey Michael Ruby, to give him his posh name. He's also written some young adult fiction. So he's got a young or kids fiction, I suppose, right?
Yeah, he's coming from his event at Women and Children First to do his own event.
His actual book signing. So he's going to come right from the book signing right into the Showcase studio right here on Michigan Avenue. And then a little bit later, we're going to rant a little about this Facebook habit of you don't just wish people a happy birthday, you have to donate to their favorite charity.
Exactly.
We're going to talk about that. And, you know, it's Thanksgiving next week, so we're going to try and hit you with a few recommendations for what you can do when all those boring relatives come into town, you get sick of them. Trying to think of some good shows to go see, some good stuff to do around the city.
Always a good idea.
Because Thanksgiving is coming up. And we're joined currently by our really great pal, Mr. Michael Phillips, bon vivant, movie critic, smart guy.
Deep thinker.
Progressive thinker.
I think you're a
passionate soul.
You know, I think it's a rave review. You know, like I can't live up to that. It's just like you guys talking about Lady Bird. You know, that movie can't live up to your praise.
And we were talking before about how you're afraid to look at the news. Well, since the news, you know, on WGN started, Hollywood Reporter has a transparent star alleges Jeffrey Tambor sexually harassed her, quote, got physical. So it's now a second accusation against Jeffrey Tambor, who's on one of the most progressive shows there is on any form of television.
Well, that is where we're at this moment.
So there you go.
Okay, so set us up. We've got Mr. Phillips here who's seen a movie.
Right.
So we can say with pretty much, you know, rocks, unless you're in the business in some way,
right,
that you haven't seen.
You
and
haven't
not only
it.
Have you not seen it.
And you meaning you all of you people listening out
you
there.
Will not see.
Yeah. Not for a long time.
So set this
and
up.
And maybe you don't want to see it, but still.
Yeah, set this up.
Yeah, so Louis C.K. had a movie that he made that people didn't realize that he'd made, right? I think that it debuted at the Toronto Film Festival, but it was kind of a movie that he'd done kind of under the radar. It's a black and white film. It's called I Love You, Daddy. And it's considered to have kind of echoes of Manhattan, and that he plays the father of, of a girl, like 17-year-old teenager who ends up having this relationship with John Malkovich, who's this older film director.
Not really John Malkovich, playing
a director. And, at the time the movie came, the movie showed at the festival, it got some pretty, respectful reviews. And now, some critics like Manola Dargis at the New York Times has gone back and kind of re-reviewed it, having seen it in Toronto and then seen it here. And then there's our own Michael Phillips, who had not seen it in Toronto and has seen it now. And so he saw it through the filter of what's going on now. So if this movie had been released and reviewed by Michael Phillips, we read what he would have said, because that's what he did say. And maybe it's how other people would relate to this movie as well. So, Michael, tell us, is there any way to even say how you would have reacted to this movie if these accusations about Louis C.K. and his mistreatment, which again is a lame word, of women hadn't come out and become public?
You don't know, you know, everything you see sort of in, at the moment you see it. Like, I don't know how I would have reacted to this film if I had seen it at the Toronto Festival. Who knows? A lot of those critics who really raved about this Louis C.K. film up there, maybe they were coming off five, six, seven disappointments in a row, and then you see a comedy, even sort of this wormy, confessional, semi-autobiographical comedy, and it had something for a lot of people. I think what Manola was dealing with in her review, Manola Dargis of the New York Times, was, you know, like a lot of other critics, was just how close to the bone Louis C.K. and his co-writer were kind of taking this thinly disguised self-portrait of himself about a guy who's really kind of, you know, kind of a confused sexual character. And, I mean, there's scenes, of course, the most notorious stuff in I Love You, Daddy is you have, now that we know what Louis C.K. was doing in terms of masturbating in front of women or on the phone after, quote, allegedly asking their permission, you know,
right.
And then writing this weaselly non-apology about, well, I guess I put him in a predicament, you know,
right.
It's just the dumbest thing he could. Anyway, in the movie, you got Charlie Day playing his comedian pal, who's, you know, has this, you know, extended, protracted scene at the early in the film where he's miming masturbation, and it just goes on sort of like endlessly, and it's just, it's impossible to watch that kind of thing now, and not have what actually happened in your head. But aside from that, I think this movie's just kind of messed up and unsatisfying in every other way. Now, would I have thought that 2 months ago? I will never
know.
Well,
I was going to ask you, is it your job as a film critic to separate the biography or the events of the news from what is, at least allegedly, a fictional film? Can you do that? Should you do that?
You know, you can, and I don't know if you should. You know, it's just like saying, during the Iraq War, we saw so many movies in the, you know, this is, you know, whatever, 10, you know, 8, 10 years ago, that were dealing in some way with the, you know, America's invasion of Iraq or the war in Iraq, however you want to phrase it. And most of the movies were not very good. Some were good. Very few of them made money, and then you had The Hurt Locker, which was sort of an exception, not a huge box office success, but a big critical one and won the Oscar for Best Picture. Is it possible to write about those films or think about those films without the war itself or, you know, dealing with the subject it's taking on? No, it's not possible. Now, do you turn reviews or your response to that film into just simply an excuse to, you know, kind of, you know, yak off about the war, about what you think of the war? No, that's a misuse of your critical, space and your platform. But, you know what I mean? You just can't ignore the context in which these things come
and
out.
And you can't also, the whole art and artist thing, when the guy wrote the movie and directed the movie, it's like an expression of him in a way that Mel Gibson in Daddy's Home 2 is not. And you know what? I wasn't going to see Daddy's Home 2 anyway, but I can't watch Mel Gibson in something. And so I'm kind of inconsistent because there are people who, excuse me, have done bad things, whose music I listen to, or who I see on film, and some people who I'm just like, I just can't, you know. Mel Gibson's comic persona, I just don't find him funny in any way. And the fact that Louis C.K. did all this stuff and then is writing about it makes it more kind of quote-unquote interesting, but it also, you can't separate it because this is his expression of how he feels. I think Mark Harris tweeted about it, like watching it now, that he said it felt like, I don't have the tweet in front of me, but it was something to the effect of that watching it now, it feels like a guy who knows what's coming.
Yeah, exactly. You're talking about Louis C.K.
Yeah, Louis C.K. that somehow he knew this was all going
to
come down.
Or even kind of has almost a wish to get it out there.
Exactly.
Did you feel that when
absolutely,
you saw
it? Absolutely, absolutely. And that does give this film kind of a sick fascination. And I think people were picking up on that streak of it in Toronto, because I think, you know, a lot of the film comes very close to just sort of saying out loud, you know, I know what I've been accused of, you know, and I know the stories, and I'm going to kind of mess with you a little bit and sort of like get right up, tiptoe up right up to the worst of it, and then sort of like back off and give you a more conventional father-daughter thing. And to me, most of it just as a piece of commercial art, you know, it's hardly worth talking about. It just feels like a second-rate comedy from the 60s, like Prudence and the Pill.
Does he feel like he's owning it or not?
Owning it? Nah, a little bit. The most telling moment in I Love You, Daddy is the film that was supposed to open this Friday, but then got pulled by the distributor after the Louis C.K., you know, revelations, right? There's a moment where he kind of, you know, is called out by his ex-girlfriend, and he just sort of turns over and says, look, I just want to say to all women out there, I'm sorry. I'm very bleeping sorry. And the way he says it, he is not contrite. And that, to me, that is a fascinating mixed moment. He's apologizing in a non-apologetic way.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Chicago's very own 720 WGN, WGNradio.com. This is Chris Jones. I'm here with my good pal and co-host, Mr. Mark Caro.
Hello.
We're in for Justin Kaufman. You are listening to The Download on this lovely Thursday, the last full work week before Thanksgiving. Coming up at the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to have Jeff Ruby, Chicago Magazine dining critic, superb writer about food, also an author of fiction. He's coming right from his book signing right here to the Showcase Studio.
He's on his way.
We're also going to have suggestions about what to do, you know, holiday weekend, all those relatives coming into town. We're going to do that, and we're going to complain about Facebook, because that's always a good way to
do it. And if you want to join us in any of these complaints and conversation, 312-981-7200. Call or text. They both work. 312-981-7200.
So right now we're with our good pal Michael Phillips, movie critic. Extravagant character from the Chicago Tribune. He's here with us. We're talking about Louis C.K. and this movie that he's seen. So explain, so from a business point of view, so is it possible to disappear a movie? I mean,
it's a small company that bought it. They spent a bunch of money for it in Toronto, and now it's like, whoop.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
The Orchard paid $5 million for it, which is a medium expensive.
And that all went into Louis C.K.'s pocket, or that?
Right. And I think it's whether or not they truly believed in it. And I think they probably did, because it got, you know, a lot of people like that film, and it's still going to get a release in France, I think, and they're just sort of waiting for the right time. So that's a delayed release in some other markets, at least France. In terms of the U.S. release, maybe eventually it will come out, and I think, you know, it'll come out pirate, you know, there'll be pirated copies all over the place, because there's DVD screeners that arrived
right.
10 minutes after the accusations appeared.
Right. This is why you've seen it, because you're a critic and you vote on Critics Awards, and so right. you get sent screeners, and right. it's like this all hits the fan, and then it's like, whoa, look what I got. Yeah,
they didn't call you and say, don't watch it.
No, although my editor, Carmel Carrillo, was watching it on a link that was provided to her by the studio, and 30 yeah. minutes in, it just simply canceled.
So somebody in
right.
in the company.
Yeah, just like,
they can stop midstream.
Due to recent tragic events, we're not going to let you. But you know, yeah, it is an unusual case, Chris, and it's this idea of kind of disappearing a movie, like it's crazy. But you know, this is happening all over the place, right? Kevin Spacey's disappeared out of a movie he already shot, and suddenly
that's incredible.
Christopher Plummer right. steps in, and you know
that is crazy. Like a month before the movie's coming out, and they're taking every scene that he shot and replacing them. You know, they have to get the actors together, they have to get the sets together, they have to get the locations, so they could put another actor in those same scenes. It's
and
crazy.
And of course, behind the scenes, you know, there's all sorts of lucrative financial yeah. deals and arrangements right. that are being disappeared all over. And, you know, it's a real lurch for the industry if you add it all up and talk about all the careers that are being thrown up. Now, do I have a problem with that personally, just as a human being on planet Earth? Not really. I mean, I think there'll be cases where, you know, that where there maybe there is an overreaction in certain cases, or in not every instance of these, you know, the harassment or assault is as bad as sort of the worst of the stuff we've been reading about. But I just think it's mitigated by the fact that finally now all these women. So many people have been writing in various, you know, for the New York Times, New Yorker, and just writing, just getting it out somehow after containing these secrets and all the shame and humiliation about what happened to them for all these years. They're finally able to be listened to.
So I have a question for both of you. Is there any artist whose work you cannot appreciate because of stuff that they've done? You know, whether it's like Polanski film or some other performer on stage or someone's music or something. Is there someone who's so tainted for you that it's something that you have liked that you're like, I can't experience this now?
Michael?
It's a good question. I think I mean, people point to Polanski. I mean, if Woody Allen were a more vital comic or any kind of filmmaker to me today, I would have more of a struggle about, well, can I put my personal ethical or moral stance on what I think may have happened with Woody Allen? To me, he hasn't made a good movie in forever. So,
yeah, but let me just take devil's advocate there and say, yeah, but as a critic, you're dealing with the backlist of a movie maker all the time, right? You're dealing with re-releases restorations. So that you can't really dodge the question that way, right? You've got to come out and say, okay, Woody Allen, you can't... Yes, it's a little easier that he's not making new vital movies, but you still have to wrestle with him as a critic, a giant of the industry.
The Polanski stuff, when you really read the Roman Polanski stuff, it is just horrific.
Yes,
you know, it is really terrible.
Yes, it is.
But you could also think, wow, Chinatown is a really cool movie. But that's the thing. I rarely hear people, when people talk about Chinatown, it's like sort of exists in this other, I mean, part of the Woody Allen problem is that he's so, either he's front and center in those movies with that persona, or his persona is just, you know, being, you know, someone else is doing the Woody thing.
Sort of thing.
But Chinatown is just a really well-written, you know, noir. Robert Towne gets a lot of credit. You got Jack Nicholson and Faye Dunaway. I mean, it's just, they're classic scenes in that movie and this classic tale of corruption in L.A. And so there's sort of this sense of, well, this guy directed the movie and he made the movie. But, you know, it's somehow... Like The Piano, I mean, the Pianist, I mean, almost won Best Picture and won a lot of Oscars, and that was like, people knew all the stuff about Polanski when this happened too. So why is he, I feel like I would like to see Chinatown again at some point, and I would be able to separate that maybe. But if I really think about Polanski, it's like, ugh, you know?
What do you say about that? Like, you know, we're running out of time, so give us your big thoughts on this.
I mean, I don't know. This news cycle, guys, it's made all the stuff we've been sort of hearing and living with the last few days, it's made the old axiom about never trust the artist, trust the tale. It's made that...
Never what? Never trust it?
Never trust... Well, this is the old axiom I don't even buy anymore.
Okay.
Never trust the artist, trust the tale. So in other words,
what
separate.
Does that mean?
Means you can separate whatever happened in real life from whatever the artist actually creates.
Yeah.
Right? I just think right now, I think it's inevitable that we look at everything through a new lens, at least for a while. You cannot watch Woody Allen's Manhattan the same way you did before.
And that's been true for a while.
Yeah, been true for a while. And that film always struck me as a little icky and a little something off. And now it's even what the things I liked about it are definitely sort of on the defensive. You know, I don't know. It's a good time to sort of examine what truly does, you know, draw the line for you, though. What about you, Chris Jones?
I don't disagree with that. I think, you know, it's hard to discuss at this moment.
Because it's almost 10 o'clock, you mean?
It is. I know, I don't mean to punt the question. I mean, I think it has to be wrestled with. It's probably not something to be wrestled with at this second. This second is sort of about...
So there's no one in your mind who pops out like, you know, I just can't appreciate this person's work for whatever reason.
Well, I think I would argue that I view them differently. I'm not sure that I would come out and say, you know, I don't shop at Walmart because I don't think Walmart was great for American cities, say. I mean, that's sort of a little thing I do.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't have many boycotts, but I just prefer to not do that. I find that harder with artists in general because I just find that more difficult. But I think, you know, it's just not the moment to say, I suppose, which is kind of what you were saying, Michael, right?
Well, and I think also if you're, you know, a full-time critic on a certain beat, you're being paid to kind of, you know, wrestle with your prejudices and all your personal obsessions or morality issues or anything and sort of still do the job and write about all kinds of things, some of which, you know, get into this sort of area of a gray area about, you know, what's going on in real life behind the work you're reviewing, you know.
Well, you do a great job, my friend, in these circumstances.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Ben.
For joining us.
Thanks for coming.